Moto America fans, it's time for another episode of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. You'll laugh, you'll cry, and you may even learn something from this unlikely pair and their special guest. The mic is yours, Paul and Sean.
Hello, Moto America fans, and welcome to episode 156 of Off Track with Carruthers and Bice. I am Bice, the second part of this happy two-person union that's been going on for several, couple years and lots of episodes. And I'm in Ohio and I'm here with Paul Carruthers. Well, I'm not here in Ohio with Paul Carruthers. I'm on this podcast with Paul Carruthers, who is in Southern California. Good morning, Paul. How are things going with you?
Oh, it's going good. It's funny. I was just thinking last night, it is as much as I kind of wanted the off season to come. Now I'm kind of itching for it to start back up again, you know, but we've got a ways, but obviously there's lots of stuff to prepare for and get ready for with the coming season. And yeah, it's going to be a good one. But in the meantime, you have to get through a cold winter. I actually turned the heater on last night. So that shows that Southern California is a bit brisk, or I'm a bit of a puss, but probably both.
Yeah, it's turned the corner here a little bit, but you know, it's funny. There's a break here, but man, we're already starting to prep. As you know, we've been talking about Daytona and all the things that are coming up. I mean, I know that you did that press release and made the announcement about King of the Baggers and how that's going to start at Daytona. So not only is it going to be cool that we're going to be back involved with the 200 again, and in a little bit of a different way, which we'll talk with our guest about today, but certainly the King of the Baggers on those banks. The high banks of Daytona are going to be pretty cool. Something to see, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I we've talked about it before, and I haven't been to Daytona in such a long time after going there every year for, you know, since I was basically 10 years old.
Yeah.
When I went to the first one, but it'll be good to get back there. And I think it'll be good for the sport to see if we can get the Daytona 200, you know, breathe a little bit of more life into it. And also, you know, as you mentioned, that the baggers should just be crazy, because I think, you know, that the problem with Daytona has never been getting the people to the town, because the town's full for bike week. It's always been an issue of trying to get those people into the speedway to watch motorcycle racing. So I think the baggers will obviously help with that. And we've seen that at previous rounds where we've had the baggers. We've got, you know, some different people show up for the races that maybe haven't been to a Moto America race before, and they come because of the baggers, but they end up seeing Superbike, Super Sport, and all the other classes, and it makes fans out of them for the rest of the series. So that's the big hope for Daytona, and we get some people to come to the speedway and enjoy what we've got and see what we do in Moto America.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So I mentioned the fact that we're back with the 200 again, and the 200 is going to have a little bit of a different look this year, and as well as our super sport season. Moto America came out with a new set of proposed rules, sent them out to the teams, and the biggest changes in those rules have to do with the super sport class, the traditional 600 class, which is now going to be in Super Sport Next Generation is going to be involved. It's kind of a moniker, not an official name, but something that's been added to the additional bikes that are not just going to be 599cc, or in the case of the ZX6R, the 636cc, there's going to be bigger displacement, different engine configurations. And it's a lot to talk about. I had written a story on it, and there was a lot of commentary on our Facebook channel and various other channels. And I made attempts to respond, but I certainly am not the right one to respond. So we thought, let's get our technical director, Teague Daney, on with us. And that's who our guest is on this week's podcast. And let's bring him in, Paul. Good morning, Teague. You're in North Carolina. Glad to have you on. We got a million questions for you.
Awesome. Glad to be here.
I don't have any questions, Teague. You know, my technical expertise runs to about, you know, changing a flat on my bicycle. So I'm here to learn and listen.
Yeah. And Teague, I have no technical expertise either, but I got a lot of questions about it. I know that. Let's start by Well, first of all, T, we haven't had you on before. Hundreds of podcasts ago, but not that many years ago, we had James Morris on, who preceded you. And I kind of introduced you a little bit last year when it was time for the Aprilia RS660 to be homologated or involved in Twins Cup. So I got to know you pretty quickly at that point. But why don't you start by telling us a little bit about what you do for us as technical director?
So technical director, obviously we write rules. We're kind of the policemen of the series. We kind of look over all the bikes, make sure they're legal. We propose rules. I got kind of a lot of hats going on. I also do a lot of other stuff outside of just the technical side. So we manage labor around the racetrack and kind of got a lot of things going on.
So let's talk about specifically what we're doing with this. And one of the things I want to start by saying to get into this, Teague, is, you know, there's been a little bit of a misnomer that, oh, you know, Moto America is screwing up this 600 class and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. Well, this, I've tried to make it clear, but let's talk about, to start with, the fact that this isn't a Moto America only objective. It's an FIM, International Federation of Motorcycling objective, and we're good stewards of that as well as partners with them, and it's kind of something that we've agreed to be involved with in the United States. Can you kind of talk about the global initiative of this change?
Well, yeah, FIM, they proposed a class similar to this, and they started testing this year in BSB with some Triumphs. And it's kind of a class that got a lot more people involved with a lot of the different things, as far as manufacturers, racers, other types of bikes. And so this year, when we looked at everything, and especially with Daytona, you know, it was like, okay, can we move forward with these rules and can we bring that level to our series? And so I think it worked, we're starting. So I think it's going to work out good, but it's been an interesting transition so far for me, but we're definitely working with FIM closely on this. So,
you know, I was working on a story this morning, Throwback Thursday. We do those on Thursday and kind of look at the Superbike class or really any of our racing from the past. And I was thinking about the fact that the year 2000 was the year, well, it happened to be the year that the Big Kahuna went from one event at Road Atlanta to a three event series within our series. And it also was the first year that the RC51 came out and raced in our Superbike class. Prior to that, it was 750s. And although at the time Ducati had a larger displacement bike with the 916. So here's something interesting, Teague, that I thought about. In this Super Sport Next Generation, one of the bikes, possibly one of the ones that's most polarizing, this Ducati Panigale V2. It's a 955cc motorcycle. And I was thinking, heck, at one time, 888 L-twin Ducatis were racing in Superbike. But now we're going to have a near 1,000cc bike in Super Sport. And why is that? And how does that fit in the class? Just, that's a big question for you, but I think you can answer that. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's a tough question. You look around at what manufacturers are making and different types of bikes that are selling, and you're trying to make a class that's all inclusive to everybody and trying to create a class that continues the super sport, which allows people to come through the ranks. You know, we're not just jumping from small bikes to thousands. So being able to take the difference now with all of the future, with all the tools we have in these days with electronics and everything, it's a lot easier to take a bike with a little bit larger displacement like that and control the output of it, where back in the day you couldn't do that electronically where we can now. So it does make it a little easier to bring a much broader array of CCs to racing. So I think it's pretty exciting.
So Teague, one question I have is, obviously the bikes are going to be of different levels starting out, but we're going to have a system in place where we can make changes to keep the parity the same that it has been, or even better, or what have you. Is it more bringing the top tier bike? Is it lowering the level of that or raising the level of the basic 600, or is it something in between?
I think it's something in between. You know, we're definitely going to raise the level of our bikes a little bit. And we're going to be bringing down the level of some other bikes a little bit, as far as just complete power output. You know, when you're looking at the entire chassis, that's not necessarily the case, but when we're looking at just power output, so there's going to be kind of a balance between the two, you know, so if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense.
So Teague, you know, one of the things I've been wondering, so this is going to take effect right with the Daytona 200. We haven't been back there. It's been handled by ASRA, American Sport Bike Racing Association, for a few years now. And then we're going back there, and we're going back into that race with kind of a mishmash a little bit. And from what I understand, the bikes are supposedly already coming sort of with algorithms and everything sort of pre-balanced based on everything from rev limits to whatever else, you know, they're going to do ballast if it's needed or anything like that. So, but I can't imagine that we're going to go to Daytona and it's all going to be perfect right off the bat. Do you think, is there going to be a plan to do any kind of balancing based on after first sessions of practice? Are we expecting that all the bikes are going to be pretty similar and have similar lap times? Or do you think are we not sure what's going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a hard question, right? Because lap times are based on so many different things. You know, obviously the quality of the rider, the output, the motorcycle, there's so much you have to look at. But our plan is, yes, we are going to be looking at balancing by session if needed at Daytona. So we have people from the FIM coming. I'll be there. We'll have a multitude of people there that's going to be looking at this. So if we see a massive disparity, then we're going to take action right away.
On one hand, although it's the first race, so it'll be the most difficult, going to Daytona is probably not a bad place to start with this, because everything is so visible as far as at least like top speed, right? I mean, you can't fake your way through Daytona.
No, I mean, obviously top speed is part of it, but you can see, like, if you have a draft, obviously your top speed is going to be quite a bit higher than the person in the lead of that draft. So we'll look at all of that. And if we think we need to make an adjustment, we will. But if you look, the balancing has been pretty good. I've started. I mean, if you look at BSB right now, the Triumph is the first bike that was done. MV has also been done. And the Ducati is being done now. And it should be, we're hoping, you know, November, December, we'll have everything done on that. But, you know, the bike isn't just dominating here, there. It's had really good results, and it's had not. So I think it's kind of worked out, you know, and you have to look at also the rider quality and look at the entire picture when you're going to go make adjustment like that.
You know, let's talk about the quote 600 class in general a little bit, Teague. I've written a couple stories over the past couple of years, and I wasn't really calling a death knell for that class, but I was kind of wondering what's going on, because it's obvious with what's happened. I mean, Honda with their CBR 600RR that doesn't exist in America anymore, and now Yamaha's R6, you can get them, but they're race-only versions, and the class is just not what it was. So, but there's still a middleweight class, or a class for middleweight racing. And so this, I assume some of this is to breathe new life into that class. But I want to ask you about that, as well as the fact that I'm a huge proponent of the Twins Cup class. I love the fact that it started out as sort of a club type thing, but it's really turned into a tuner class. And I mean, now you got Aprilia involved. Now Yamaha's got this R7 that's come out, and they're doing this R7 Cup in Europe. So it sounds like it maybe someday down the road might be a spec series, maybe in Moto America. I don't know, Wira, whatever it might be, but at least Yamaha's putting some money into creating a class for that Twins bike. they don't, except for that sort of race only super sport bike, they don't really have that bike anymore, except now we're providing a lot of provisions to make those bikes better. And I'm kind of wondering, because it's the one class where we've looked at lap times at every round, and we still see records that were set by Garrett Gerloff and JD Beach back when they raced 600s, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. So yeah, I assume with this new change, we're going to see lower lap times, and maybe even 600s are still going to be stout because they're going to be allowed to do certain things. Is that a fair assessment of what's going to happen?
Yeah, I think we could see some lap times dropping a little bit. I mean, the bikes are going to be a little bit quicker. I think people are assuming that they're going to be this massive horsepower increase, which is we're not expecting a huge increase in power. Obviously, we are expecting the level to come up, but it's not going to be, you know, 10, 20 horsepower, nothing like that. So when the reason those records still kind of stand is because that was a different level. Those bikes were a little higher level than we're going to be. So those bikes had different things you can do, like links and some offset stuff. They also had ported head. They also had a much higher level engine spec than we're going to currently have. So we didn't want to go that far with it, which was full world super sport spec at the time. And so, yes, you're going to see some quicker bikes. To that level, I don't think you'll see that type of horsepower numbers, but, you know, we're definitely going to see some faster motorcycles than we had in the last couple of years.
Okay, I'm glad you clarified that, T, because, man, I looked at those, and again, this goes back to when Paul was saying, you know, the mechanical side of it, and I'm the same way. I looked at the changes, and I was like, oh, okay, we're going to kind of go back to what we were before. We're really not going to do that. We're still not going to do that yet, but we are. It's sort of in between with the 600s, but with these larger bikes, the 765s and the 955 in Ducati's case, everything's going to be kind of balanced out, where we might see quicker lap times, but maybe not completely as fast as they were before, because those were really open super sport bikes back then. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they were definitely a higher level. Our current engine spec isn't changing much than we've had it in the last couple of years. You know, we're not going back to porting, and we're not going back to some of the allowances that were allowed back then. We are allowing a couple things like velocity stacks, like a controlled velocity stack. We're also allowing some controlled cam shafts. So we already know the outputs, a lot of these things. It's not open, so you don't get it, like, it's not an open part where you can just pick whatever you want. It's actually a controlled part. So we are bringing the level of the bikes up, but probably not as far as they were back when Super Sport was originated with Moto America.
Okay.
Okay, T, you've already said that you're kind of the police down there in the paddock. What class tries to get away with the most? And I would guess that it would be maybe Junior Cup, because it seems to me like, and I don't want to use the word cheating, but it seems to me like the more production the bikes are supposed to be, the more people try to get away with little things. Is that accurate?
I think so. I, you know, any of the production-based classes, Stock 1000, Junior Cup, we probably get the most infractions. But I don't obviously truly believe that a lot of it's malicious, and some of people, I think it's just one of those things that a lot of people just don't read the rule book, you know? And so, but yeah, I mean, those are definitely the two classes where we get the most infractions, but it's also some of the two of the classes that are larger as well. So you just have more bikes in it, especially like Stock 1000. So.
Yeah, that makes sense. You're one of the guys in the paddock that has to be a bad guy, and it can't be enjoyable, but I guess you got to just dig your heels in and do the right thing all the time and just treat things fairly. And sometimes things happen and sometimes they don't. Coming into the job, is there more policing than you thought, or less, or is it about what you figured it would be?
That's a tough one. You know, when I took coming into the job, I mean, as far as the basics of tech at the racetrack, it's pretty similar to what I've you know, what I thought it was going to be, but I've been in the paddock for so many years, so I was kind of used to it. It's the outside of the racetrack stuff that maybe I wasn't always expecting, some of the politics and the, you know, you really try to work with everybody, but there's no way you can never write something that's fair for both parties, right? So you're always trying to do your best to work out whatever the issue is for everybody and trying to make the best decision you can to make it fair or easier or whatever the situation is. And it doesn't always work for both parties. So the politics is actually the part that I maybe wasn't as knowledgeable about, that I wasn't expecting. But other than that, yeah, at the racetrack, since I've been there for so long, it's pretty much what I expected. There's been some things I was a little surprised about, but not too much.
You know, Teague, I want to tell you right now about my hopes and dreams. I hope you're ready to listen. Paul listens to my hopes and dreams sometimes.
Yeah.
I haven't, my wife does too. I haven't even told her about this hope and dream, but I have a hope and dream for this year's Daytona 200, the 80th running of the Daytona 200, that we get a bunch of riders from the British super sport class, including the defending champion, Mr. Brandon Posh, who could come over with that Dynavolt Triumph team and put that bike right in the show. That is a street triple 765. And British Superbike, British Super Sport has been running that these new rules this year. So these teams could come over and get involved. And we've talked with Wayne and Chuck a bunch of times about that. I know Paul has too. They always wax poetic about the days of the Easter match races when they used to go over and race in Europe against the Brits. And if we could get those guys to come over for the 200 in February, it's kind of a pre-Easter match race. What do you think? Could that happen? Could those bikes come slot right into the 200 and go out on the high banks?
Absolutely. Okay. We'd love to see them. I think, you know, like the 765 Triumph can basically just come on over. There'd be maybe just a balance update. Other than that, it should be able to run as it is. And there has been a couple teams that's reached out to us about coming over. So fingers crossed. That's definitely the goal, is trying to get teams from all over the world to come over and race this 200 with us. And then even possibly do a couple, you know, Moto America rounds. That would be awesome as well.
Yeah. And in fact, on top of that, just to kind of add to the fact that Paul posted a story on the website the other day from HSBK Racing, lamenting the fact that Loris Baz is going to go back to World Superbike. But at the same time, they've announced they're going to have a rider on that 955, that Panigale V-twin, which is going to be legal for our class. They didn't announce the rider yet, but they've said they're going to have it for Daytona end the season. So they're already, we know that one of those super sport next generation bikes from that team, HSBK Racing, and I assume it's the entire Warhorse, you know, the way their sponsors have been, Ducati New York and HSBK Racing will have that bike. We don't know who's going to ride it yet, but we sounds like we pretty much know for a fact we're going to have that big displacement bike going up against those 600s, and we're going to get to see firsthand at that 200. Is that how you understand it to be as well, Teague?
Yeah, I mean, I saw that same post. So when I saw that post, I was like, yeah, it's exciting. I don't know about the details of anything else of it, but I did saw that post, so. I've also got, you know, there's a lot of inquiries for some Triumph bikes and some of the Ducatis, so people to run these next generation bikes. So it's exciting. I hope to see if, you know, I'd like to see a lot of them.
Now, for those of you that don't know, Teague, like he's mentioned, he's been in the paddock forever. Most recently as Michael Gilbert's crew chief prior to taking the job with Moto America. So normally it seems like, at least back in the day, you would try to find like the crew chief that was really good at cheating and you would make him your tech inspector. Do you think that led to you getting the job? I mean, T, were you bending the rules a lot or what?
No way, man. Never. Never happened. Maybe you only got caught once.
You can't get a kidder. Is that what it is?
That's right.
Oh, pretty good.
No way, man.
Hey, Teague, so when you got started with us, I alluded to this earlier, you kind of jumped right in with both feet on this twins thing, and it was the idea of getting this Aprilia balanced or figured out for the class. And the bike didn't come in and it wasn't the overlord in the class. It did win the championship. It won races. But you know, it turned out to be pretty fairly balanced. I mean, we had some podiums where the Suzuki was still involved, Yamaha, you know, were still involved. And now that they've got that R7, how is that class going? Are we pretty balanced going into this next year? And we kind of started out, you know, Jackson Blackman and, Hayden, Schultz had R7s and they'll be I'm sure running them again this year. So do you think that that class right off the bat is going to, well, that'll be at Atlanta when we get started with that class. Do you anticipate that that's going to kind of continue to be a solid class like it's been and just keep getting better and better?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we're not making any changes with that class. I think it worked out pretty well. I think that was my first bike I had to come up with a balancing situation for, and I think we did a pretty good job with it. There were some races that were all three bikes on the podium. There were some races where all three Aprilias on the podium. There was, you know, it was a really good season. I think I'm excited to see what happens this year. The new R7 should be great. I think the Aprilia is going to keep going through the development stage. So I think you're going to see some bikes getting even a little quicker this year, and hopefully some Suzuki's getting quicker as well.
That's great. I want to ask you about Stock 1000. So I did read through the rules. Thankfully, the new stuff is pointed out in red, so I didn't have to go through stuff I already kind of have read before. But in Stock 1000, there's this change that's going to allow aftermarket wheels. And from what I understand, cost is a bit of a factor on that. But I had a question, and it's from what I observed in the paddock, and I want to ask you if this is partially true. And I don't think it was Superbike. I think it was Stock 1000. Some of the teams had a fair number of problems keeping their tires from rotating on the wheel. Sometimes that happens when OEM wheels or even aftermarket possibly don't have enough grip in the rims, and the fact that you're running lower air temperatures than you do on the street. So that sometimes the tires will rotate on the rim. And when that happens, obviously it throws everything out of balance and you get a weird feeling where it feels like a tire is going down or something. Did that change to aftermarket wheels? Did that have anything to do with this issue of those tires rotating, or was it purely a cost savings?
No, I mean, that did happen this year. I saw that quite a bit, but no, that had nothing to do with it. Everything was supply and cost savings. You know, I went and talked to a lot of different teams going from all over the paddock for Stock 1000. I talked to some of the manufacturers, asked them their opinion, and all, you know, generally most people were, you know, positive about going forward with that rule because, you know, there is a supply problem, you know, with some wheels from some manufacturers. Some of them are quite expensive. Some of them are not, but, you know, so we tried to come up with something that helped everybody. Fingers crossed it does. I think most people and all are pretty excited about it, but you're not required to run them as well. So I want to be clear about that. You can still run your wheels, the OEM wheels that you have as well.
So, you know, I want to underscore that, Teague. One of the things that you are involved in and Moto America is involved in from this idea of these changes. And again, I want to point out that this is FIM directed with the Supersport Next Generation. And some of it's designed to keep the class competitive, of course, because as we said, the fact that some 600 bikes are not available as much. But a lot of the stuff that we do and that you do in tech, I don't think it's maybe there's a realization to the point of the aftermarket wheels allowance to it's actually made to try to save some money for the teams. Can you talk about that a little bit? We're not all about necessarily making sure that we make the teams come up with the most, you know, buy the most expensive things in order to race in our series. Can you explain about that, or at least underscore that idea of the cost savings part of it that you have to think about as well?
Well, we all know racing is expensive. There's no such thing as racing that's not expensive. So the goal is trying to manage it the best you can and help where you can. You know, teams that are coming into the paddock. So let's say a new team that says, we're going to move on to this platform bike, and they're starting with a new motorcycle. For them, they generally can, you know, to find out, they have the opportunity now to get some sponsorship. They have an opportunity to whatever that situation is, but they can go now and purchase wheels from an aftermarket supplier. To be clear, they have to be on the eligibility list. So they have to be an approved aftermarket supplier for that particular class. And those wheels have to fit under a price cap. But it gives them the opportunity to go find it and get them sometimes easier, quicker, and definitely generally cheaper. So, you know, you look at some of the bikes these days and some of the wheels, there's such a big range of pricing of those wheels. And really, we just tried to figure out a way, you know, was, can it be easier? There was, I saw people crashing. They're like, well, I don't have any wheels left and I can't get any more, you know, for, you know, it was like one of those things happened a couple times this year that you're looking at and say, okay, what can we do to help these guys out? I know it doesn't always come across that way to some of the competitors, but that's truly the way we went about this.
All right, T, we're going to let you go, but I'm going to ask one more question. Without embarrassing anybody or naming names, is there anything that, is there anything that stood out in your mind from your first year on the job as like, holy crap, I can't believe that guy tried that, or I can't believe how stupid it was for that guy to do that, or is there nothing that's like out of the ordinary?
Yeah, there's a few. There's definitely a few. I can't name names, but
no, don't name names.
There's some stuff with, you know, motorcycle gear that you're just like, man, really? You know, because we also have to make sure that that's correct in tech. People don't realize that sometimes. There are some things that people tried to get through that maybe didn't think I was going to find that I think they were surprised when I found it. So There's definitely some stuff out there that you're like, hey, I'm doing this because I do know what I'm looking at. So, yeah.
All right.
we need Tig to do a tell-all at some point, Paul.
Well, yeah, I think he probably,
no way.
I think after this year, he'll have more stuff to talk about because it's going to be a hectic one. But Tig, thanks for joining us. I don't envy your position as far as getting started with the new year, but probably from your spot, it probably looks pretty exciting and it'll be a lot of fun. Hello.
I think who let the dogs out? Did you hear the dogs?
Hold on. I'm having like a technical issue with my phone.
That's fitting.
That's all right. We're ready to wrap up anyway, Teague.
All right, you guys. Hey, thanks, Teague. And we'll talk to you again. And thanks for explaining some of these new rules to the people. And we look forward to getting them started in March at Daytona.
Yeah. Thanks, guys, so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
All right, guys. Take care.
Yeah. Take care.
Bye. Cheers.